Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey there. Welcome in, everybody. Happy Thursday to you here on Sports Daily. We are in the fall groove, and we are glad to be in the fall groove as we make our way through. And boy, we have a lot to get to today. We get the Rashi Rice news. We get the Royals and a big series finale against the White Sox, and finally, a day off. We get our NFL official prediction show here today. We'll bring in our betting insider, PJ Glasser. We'll bring in our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald. It's all on tap for you today, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, featuring Yumkin Pumpkin Ale, WBC's most popular seasonal beer that's made with actual pumpkin and served with a spiced rim. Yumkin Pumpkin, now available at Wichita Brewing Company, pizza and beer made here. Tommy, good morning. You ready for all this?
Man, it's a busy day. I don't know how we're going to cram it all in. I feel like we might need to extend the show out a little bit to get everything in.
It's going to be tight. It's going to be tight. That's for sure. So what we will do is we will go through this and then get you through the news. So we're going to start right here off the top, Tommy, with the big news. And that's Rashi Rice yesterday. He gets a 6-game suspension. He agrees to a 6-game suspension. It lands exact. I don't know where you ultimately landed on how long this would be. I always thought 6-game suspension made the most sense, maybe 6 to 8. That's where it lands. I think that's, it sounds like it's a settlement. The league wanted more than that. Rice wanted less than that. They got to 6. He's not going to fight it. That's a good look for him, quite frankly. And now he'll be out 6 games, and the Chiefs at least know when it will be. It'll be right at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I think that clarity is extremely important. I know it was really surprising when the news came out about the independent arbitrator hearing the case and when that was scheduled and the fact that there were going to be regular season games that were played before then. I think that all indications were that, yeah, while that was on the table and scheduled, that both sides were probably going to look for some kind of settlement or resolution before the regular season started. And for me, I mean, you could start to really figure out that something was happening behind the scenes when the final 53-man roster came out and the Chiefs were carrying 8 wide receivers. I know you and I talked about that just the other day about, man, like, why are they carrying 8 wide receivers? And for me, it seemed like, number one, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but number one, Jalen Royals may not be good to go for the first game in Brazil. But then number two, it indicated to me that there was potentially something going on with the Rashi Rice suspension and that maybe something would happen sooner rather than later. And so it didn't at the time make a whole lot of sense as to why they were carrying 8 wide receivers. Now we understand that because Rice won't be on the 53-man roster when the season begins.
Yeah, it's it was a good call by you. 8 guys doesn't make sense. Why doesn't it make sense? It's just, it's strange that we couldn't have gotten to this point sooner. Not that it, you know, ultimately it landed where I think everybody probably expected it to. The league wanted to go big. The Chiefs were, or well, Rashi Rice was hoping to go small. They meet in the middle, 6 games. But why didn't they just start there, right? Like, what took so? It doesn't matter anymore because it happened before the start of the season. And now the Chiefs will prepare for it. Rice will have time for his knee to heal a little bit more. And so, look, is it an ideal scenario for the Chiefs? Of course it's not. They play some of their most difficult games right out of the gates here. As we'll get to in our predictions, there probably isn't a ton of margin for error this year. So now they've got to figure out life without Rashi Rice. They've also got to probably, to your point, figured out without Jalen Royals, who at least doesn't appear to be available now. So the deep wide receiver room is being pushed to its limit right out of the gate, Tommy. Now it's Worthy, Juju, Hollywood Brown, Kelsey. It's essentially the group that they had at the end of last season and into the playoffs. That's what they'll have to open this season. Now, I think it's a healthier, more acclimated Hollywood Brown. I think it's an Xavier Worthy we saw at the end of the year that was a big, big weapon for them. And I think it's a rejuvenated Travis Kelce and a much better offensive line. So I still think it will be better, but it's certainly not going to be as good as it would be without Rashee Rice. But we knew this was coming at some point. I mean, it was like there was no way that he skated a long suspension here. He sent people to the hospital. If any of those people don't survive, Tommy, we're looking at a Henry Ruggs situation, right? Like it's just, I think that the whole thing, like everybody's got to be ready for that thing to be behind him. I'm very hopeful that Rashee Rice learned a very serious lesson in all of this and he can come and finish a career and do all those things. But it's behind us now and the Chiefs won't have him for 6 weeks. And this is significant.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, I feel like collectively Chiefs Kingdom kind of exhaled a little bit, at least from what I could tell, just from what I saw on social media and all of that. And then I kind of exhaled as well, because to your point, the Chiefs made a Super Bowl run a season ago without Rashee Rice, who was injured, without Jalen Royals, who was still in college, with Hollywood Brown just coming back and being healthy, missing all of the regular season and really only getting game reps in the playoffs. Xavier Worthy, who was a rookie and getting acclimated to life in the NFL, and Travis Kelce, who a lot of people had said had lost a step a season ago. That was what they had. Those were the weapons that Patrick Mahomes had in his last Super Bowl run a season ago. So it's the same personnel to run the first 6 weeks of the season, but to your point, better. I think better in all accounts. Better with and healthier with Hollywood Brown and Xavier Worthy. You know, we saw him ascend throughout the regular season and into the playoffs and really become a major, major threat to opposing defenses. Travis Kelce, who looks phenomenal during the offseason. So I don't think, of course, you want to have Rashee Rice out on the field. You absolutely do. He's your wide receiver one. But I think there was a collective exhale a little bit that, okay, we know what the punishment is. It's happening at the beginning of the season. The Chiefs can get it out of the way. And even without him, this is the same personnel that went to a Super Bowl a season ago. So, and really, I know that the first six games are, you know, by and large, as a whole, difficult. But you might have a different opinion than I do on this. Really, in my opinion, the only game of major significance in that first six is the Ravens game. Because that's where...
Yeah, well, I disagree.
But that's where you're going to have to worry about home field advantage. That's where you're going to have to worry about the number one seed in the AFC. Yeah, you've got a divisional matchup against the Chargers. You've got a Super Bowl rematch against the Eagles. But in my opinion, the only game that really will impact like seeding and all of that and where the playoffs run through is that game against the Ravens.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. We'll get into it. I think the problem is you're looking at games they could lose. You were already looking at games they could lose. But when you're considering Lions, Ravens, Eagles, and maybe the Chargers, you lose two of those games and you're behind the eight ball a little bit in that home field advantage conversation. You lose three of them. You know, I think that's all on the table. And we'll get into this in our next segment because we're going to predict the NFL season here in our long segment of this hour. But it's definitely something to consider and to factor in when we go through those things. And that's what we'll do next on the way out here. Before we do that, let's give away some Swing 365 golf. All you got to do to win a week in the free, a free week in the best simulator in town. It's indoor. It's private. It's great. They got a couple of TVs. You can bring your own food and drinks in. Text the keyword swing right now to 20357. That's swing to 20357 for your chance to win. It's Albrecht and Caster. We have a jam-packed show, so we're moving quickly today on a Thursday. We're coming back. We'll predict the NFL season next on Sports Daily.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster with you. Glad to be with you on this Thursday morning. Sports Talk on KFH presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days. You can always, though, count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. And 12 News. That's all coming soon. We appreciate you watching us right now on 12 News Connected, on Facebook, on YouTube, on X, all the places that you take in the show. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up. It's a rainy, cool, fake fall morning here, so the Prairie Fire Coffee is always greatly appreciated as well. And thank you to Crestview Country Club for their support of this program. It is a day that you're glad, Tommy, that you can go hit the couple of simulators at the club. Maybe you forego the outside golf and just go have a beer at the bar or the great restaurant there. But lots of different things going on at Crestview Country Club. Give them a call. Tell them we sent you. Ask about all the different memberships that they have going today. It's a lot of different ways you can take in the fun out there. We appreciate their support. All right, Tommy, it's NFL prediction time. Now, this is hard. Like, this is, and I knew this was going to be hard. It's been hard all off season. I think it's been the last at least 3 years, if not four, or maybe even five. I don't know. It's been a long time since I haven't picked the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl. And I'll just, you know, spoiler alert, I'm not going to pick the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl.
Wow. Okay.
It's the first time in a while. It's an interesting year because I'm so high on the potential of their offense. But I do think their defense will be not quite as good. And I also think the teams around them that are of significance have all gotten better in the AFC. So that's kind of the basis of it. We'll get to that. Are you surprised at all with where you went? Will people be surprised at all with where you went here?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that it's, a lot of it, obviously, we went through each division and kind of the way that we see each division panning out. Really, for me, where it's been the most difficult is at the very end of the wild card.
Which is always difficult.
In both leagues. Like, there are a couple of teams that I'm bouncing back and forth on about, will they make it into the playoffs? Will they not as the wild card? That's really been the most difficult. I think, you know, out of the eight different divisions, there's probably six of them that I feel highly confident in. Which I think is probably more than usual. I think that we know, at least I feel like I know, I've got a pretty good idea on who I think is going to win each division outside of a couple of them.
Yeah, I our divisional winners, I don't remember yours, Tommy. We went through these. I don't think either of us had surprises there. In fact, they may all be the same for me as they were. Did the Rams end up winning the division last year? They may be the same as they were a year ago, essentially. With the exception of, no, they did. Yeah, I think all my division winners are the same as they were a year ago. For me, it's Buffalo, Baltimore, Kansas City, Houston, Detroit, Philly, Tampa Bay, and the Rams. Those are the division winners. Just as a recap, we've taken these division by division. Did you have anything different than that? I think we were the same.
So my division winners, I have Chiefs, Ravens, Texans, and Bills. That's the same as you, I believe, right? In the AFC.
Yeah.
And then in the NFC, I've got Rams, Eagles, Packers, and Bucks. So there might be, I've got the Packers winning the division in the North.
Okay. I have Packers not making the playoffs. That division, if we recall, is a wild one. And there's, you know, if I knew they were fully healthy, that might change, but they're pretty banged up right now. All right. So let's take this through. So we'll go, you know, your wild cards then. I'll let you start us here. Wild cards in the NFC.
Yeah, I've got the Lions as a wild card. I think that they still make the playoffs. I think the Packers from top to bottom are poised to make a division title run. Also, by the way, then this is totally speculation and rumors, but there have been some rumors going around that potentially Micah Parsons could be traded to the Packers. And so if that happens, then it, you know, that puts them over the top, I feel like, for sure, in that division. But I still have the Lions making the playoffs. They'll be probably the best wild card team in either conference. There's no doubt about that in my mind. But I've got Detroit as a wild card. I've got the Commanders as a wild card. And I've got the 49ers as a wild card.
Okay. Commanders. Okay. Yeah, this is where it gets really, really difficult for me. And I have the Commanders taking a step back. I'm going to eat these words. I'm almost certain, but I don't have the Commanders making it in. Now I have them still winning a bunch of games and doing all those things. I felt like I needed sort of a bold commitment in this thing because it was getting really vanilla. And so I'm like, you know what? I do think the Commanders will take a step back. Something crazy always seems to happen. So probably the craziest thing I have happening in any of this is that the Commanders don't make it and the Bears make the playoffs. So I have my wild cards as the Bears, the Cowboys, and the Vikings. I think the Vikings, even now with Thielen, boy, that protects them a little bit more. JJ McCarthy's being put in a really good position to succeed. I am pretty high on them. I do think Dallas's offense is going to be very, very high octane. Dak Prescott always wins 8 games. If that's his floor, I think they could get to 10. That's also pretty risky, though. So those are my 3 wild cards. The Commanders, that means the Commanders don't make it for me, Tommy. That means the 49ers don't make it for me. Like there's some, I'm taking some bold risk. I told you,
You've got the Packers not even making the playoffs.
I got the Packers last in their division, which again, that one to me, like that division, the whole thing could go upside down. And I'm like, whatever. Like I don't feel terrible.
And I'm solely basing off my Commanders wild card pick based off of what they did a season ago. And I'm not baking in really any kind of regression or any kind of step back, you know, for them. So who knows? I mean, I'd like to think that Jaden Daniels and Dan Quinn, even with the loss of Brian Robinson, they've got Terry McLaurin back now locked in. I'd like to think that they'll be able to continue what they did a season ago. But to be, you know, quite honest with you, it was a major, major, major difficult decision for me between the Niners and the Bears for that final wild card spot. So I don't think it's way outlandish to say the Bears take that step forward and make the playoffs. In fact, when we did our division in the NFC North, I've got the Bears over the Vikings. I think the Vikings finish last in the division, and I've got the Bears in third place, and they were right there on the cusp, in my opinion, of a wild card berth. But I went with the more proven 49ers squad. You know, obviously they're decimated by injuries right now, but I've got them as getting that final wild card spot.
Let's take you in then to the AFC. I'll go first here with wild cards, and this time for me it's going to be Denver as the final seed in, Chargers then would be the 6th seed, and Cincinnati as the 5th seed. It's hard to imagine. It's easy to imagine Cincinnati's defense being as bad as it was a year ago. It's hard to imagine them playing as poorly as they did early in the season and not being able to overcome that anyway. So I'll put Cincinnati in as my 5 seed. You know, that it's not as, that's not as painful, I don't think, as it is in the NFC when you're going to say, oh, that means I have the Titans and the Jaguars and the Colts and the Browns and the Raiders and the Jets. Like there aren't as many like in the AFC as there are in the NFC.
Yeah. So I've got Denver as well. In fact, I've got Denver as the first wild card team. I don't have them as the final bid. I think that they'll be pretty good this year. So I've got the Broncos as my first wild card team. I've got Pittsburgh making the playoffs. And that's solely because of Mike Tomlin. It's solely because of the fact that like they're never bad. Even, and we have no idea how the marriage between he and Aaron Rodgers will work out. But I've got the Steelers getting into the playoffs as a wild card. And then it was a big decision for me too. Like I went between really like trying to figure out, okay, is there another team that could come in and take down Cincinnati for that final wild card spot? And I think the Chargers will do it. So I've got the Chargers over the Bengals as my final wild card team. There was another dark horse team that I considered a really bold move, and that was the Patriots, having them sneak into the final wild card spot. I do think they'll take a big step forward. I'm not sure they'll get all the way to the playoffs this year. So I kept them out, but I was really close to putting them in as my final wild card team.
Yeah, it's and these things at the bottom end don't, like, I'm not going to sit here I'm not going to sit here in 4 months and like regret any of this or anything. It's just we're trying to do this the best we can. It's a fun thing to do at the beginning of the season, but meh. When we get further in here now, that's where it gets a little dicey. So what we'll do now is we'll take you to our conference championship games. You can go first here, Tommy. Who do you have representing the NFC in the conference championship?
Yeah, in the NFC, I have got the Packers representing the NFC, and I've also got the Eagles representing the NFC. So I think those two teams will be in the NFC championship game.
And who do you have winning?
I actually have the Packers winning. I'm really high on Green Bay this year. I've got them going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, look, if they get everybody healthy, they have a lot to work with. Yep. One of the best defenses in football, and about five very talented, highly drafted wide receivers. So I get it. All right, for me, it's Philly and Detroit, and I'm going to take the Lions. I really do think, man, it's little things for me. I've always thought, and we went through this in the divisions, I think they're being overlooked. I think the coordinator thing is a big deal, but their players are all still really good and ascending, right? So many of their players are hitting their prime at the same time, especially offensively. We are going to have to see Goff in fewer indoor games, which that to me is more concerning than the coordinator thing. But I do like their players. I think their defense is certainly going to be better. I think Hutchinson is a baller. And, you know, just little things like this Tesla guy, the third-round rookie they took out of Arkansas blowing up in the preseason. I'm like, what if they have another weapon there? Like, what if you throw him in the mix of Laporta and Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jameson Williams and Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery and this great offensive line? They just feel like they're going to be really good to me, and I think they're ready to take the next step.
So honestly, I've
got Detroit representing.
Yeah, and with the Lions, real quick on that, the only reason I don't have them going to the conference championship is because I have them as a wild card, so their path will be a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
They'll have to play one more game. And I've got a bad taste in my mouth from the way the home playoff game went a season ago for them.
I have them as the one seed. So in mine, they're playing through Detroit. Yeah. I do think that's going to be difficult for them, but I also think it's going to be difficult for Philadelphia because I think all three of the teams in Philadelphia's division are good. I won't say I don't think Washington's better, but even if Washington's as good, Dallas will certainly be better with Dak Prescott. And I do think the Giants with Russell Wilson are going to be better than the disaster that was last season. Watch out for Kim Scadabo at some point. All right, in the AFC, I'll go first here. I've got Kansas City going to Baltimore. I do think this Rice news swayed me back over the line. I don't know if they're going to be able to host this thing this year. But this is more about the Ravens. It's hard for me not to pick the Chiefs because I have so much faith in Mahomes and I have so much faith in Andy Reid. And I do think their offense is going back to the old days when we'll score a ton of points. But man, I think the Ravens will too. I think the Ravens defense got so much better over the course of last season that I kind of feel like they're going to be an elite unit this year. And if they're an elite unit, if Derrick Henry still has any gas in the tank, and I don't know why we wouldn't think he does, he's a unicorn, then I just like their offense and defense are going to be so good. It's finally the year Lamar has some good playoff games, takes him to the Super Bowl, and then I'll pick Baltimore over Detroit in my Super Bowl. I've got the Ravens winning the Super Bowl. It was hard not to take Kansas City. It was hard not to take Buffalo as the team that gets through finally this year and represents in a Super Bowl. I just think the Ravens between the Ravens and the Bills and the Chiefs, I think the Ravens probably end up with the best defense this year. And I also think they end up with home field And so that's where it was for me.
Yeah. So where I do agree with you is I also have Kansas City going to Baltimore. And the only reason I've got Baltimore as the higher seed is because these two teams play head to head and they won't have Rashee Rice. And I do think that that will be the deciding factor, that they're, you know, that may end up being a tiebreaker in the conference. So I do have Kansas City as like the number two seed going to Baltimore. But where I differ is I think Kansas City will win. I've got the Chiefs going back to the Super Bowl for the fourth year in a row, and I've got Kansas City winning the Super Bowl over Green Bay. And really, I think a lot of it is because, by all accounts, it's probably Travis Kelce's last year, and this team is pretty angry from the way things went a season ago. Yeah. So while they may not have as many regular season wins, that's going to be highly, highly, highly difficult for them to accomplish in the regular season, going 15-2 like they did a year ago. I think that they'll be a better overall team talent-wise and production-wise than they were a year ago. I think they'll make a run through the playoffs, back to the Super Bowl. And I like Green Bay a lot, but I don't think Green Bay is ready to shine on that stage. I'll take the experience over the Chiefs in Green Bay in the Super Bowl.
This is one where I'll tell you, the only two futures bets I've made are the Chiefs and the Lions winning the Super Bowl. I'm not confident at all that it won't be the Chiefs. And if we get into like week three, and the defense is acclimated and looks like it's going to be a top tier unit again, I'm going to change my mind. I mean, I'll tell you, I'm telling everybody, like, I will change my mind. If this defense looks like it's going to be like it has been, then I'm going to change my mind and I'll probably go back to the Chiefs. But I think that's a big question right now. So as we're predicting on August 28th, which is always a fun and silly and pointless thing to do anyway, because so many things happen in the NFL with injuries, that there it is. Like that, so we make our picks real quick. Tommy, do you have an MVP pick? I'll go first in case you don't. Let's think about it because we have just a couple of minutes. I'm gonna say Joe Burrow is going to be the MVP this year. He'll get his. I think that defense is going to be bad. I think he's going to challenge probably some passing records because he will have to this year. And so they will make the playoffs and he'll have the kinds of numbers that he had. And it'll be just too much to ignore. And it'll be like, all right, well, 5,000 yards and 45 touchdowns and they made the playoffs. Joe Burrow is going to be our MVP. So that's my MVP.
Yeah, I don't have Joe Burrow. I mean, I think he'll put up really good stats as he usually does. And the team is going to have to score a bunch of points to be able to have any kind of chance at making the playoffs. But because I don't have the Bengals even in the playoffs, I can't pick Joe Burrow.
If they don't make it, he won't win it.
So my MVP pick is Lamar Jackson. I think Jackson will have another MVP-type season. He'll lead the Ravens to the number one seed. But, of course, I've got Kansas City upsetting them in the conference championship to go to their fourth straight Super Bowl. But I've got Lamar as my MVP.
There it is. There's your NFL predictions. Sure to fail. Maybe not. We've been pretty good at these. It's been,
who's your defensive, always, do you have a defensive player of the year? Do you have anybody in mind for that?
I'll throw a dart at a dark horse. I think Hutchinson might get it. I think he's going to stand out on what won't be an elite Lions unit, but I have them going to the Super Bowl. I think he could pile up tons of sacks for them. I'll call Hutchinson in an ascending career.
Yeah, I honestly, Hutchinson was who I had written down too, because I think that he's got, that chip on his shoulder after getting injured a season ago and all of that. So I think Hutchinson will be the guy.
He's going to have a lot of sacks and it usually goes to that player. So Hendrickson, it's kind of the same Hendrickson formula, right? The opposing teams will probably have to throw it a lot and he stands out that way. That's interesting that you went that way. I wouldn't have thought that. That's a hard award. That award's so hard. I mean, it's basically just pick the best pass rusher every year. And didn't Sertan get it last year though?
Yeah. I think that's right.
Yeah, and he was outstanding. Let me just double check that. I believe it was Patrick Sertan. So last year was a good example. It doesn't happen very often, but it can that you don't get it to. Get it to a corner. So there those are. Tommy, baseball time. It is it's a good day off. We've had a few of those little unnerving days off lately, but it's a good day off now for the Royals, who just explode against the White Sox. 12-1 winners. The Mariners also win yesterday, which is a bummer. The Red Sox also win yesterday, which is a bummer. The Yankees also win yesterday, which is a bummer. So no progress in the wild card standings, but you didn't lose a game. It took 4 or 5 innings, and all of a sudden the Royals put up an 8 spot in the fifth, and good night, Cardinals. They did a nice job.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, like they were able to offensively come alive, and there were, you know, so many different key contributors in that game to take the series against the White Sox. Really, it started with Bobby Witt Jr. and a 2-out single on the right side that drove in a couple of runs, and then the floodgates were open, and they put up a bunch of 2-out runs and got 2-out hits and all of that. It was a really good showing for them about midway through the game. And, you know, Aaron Civale, he pitched pretty well through the first 4 or 5 innings, really held the Royals down. The Royals were not able to get a whole lot going on. I posted on social media yesterday that if there was a book that was going to be written about the 2025 Royals season, it would be titled Feast or Famine. That's really the way that this offense has performed all season long, where they get shut down and they do absolutely nothing. But then when the floodgates open, they pour it on. And that's kind of the way that it's been. There hasn't been a whole lot of overall consistency, but when they score runs, they put up a lot of them in a short period of time. So that's what we needed to see from Kansas City. I know that all the teams around them in the wild card, they all won as well. So disappointing that they weren't able to gain ground, but they were able to salvage a 500 road trip. And you drop 2 of 3 to Detroit. You're kind of on the brink against Chicago, and you're like, man, like, is this going to happen for the Royals? They've really got to get it turned around. And then they're able to actually, you know, get it turned around and make it happen and come back home with a 500 road trip. And so things are back on the table for them. They're still not out of the woods at all, and they're not out of the race.
No,
but it was a good showing for them last night.
I mean, they're going to have to win this series against Detroit, most likely. We're going to have to start seeing some special things against good opponents too, if they're ultimately going to get to the amount of wins that they're going to need to get to, and that means beating good teams. You know, they're beating the bad teams, which they have to do, but they're also going to, I think, have to beat the good ones because they've just got too much ground to make up and not a ton of time to make it up. Ryan Burgert continues to be really good for Kansas City. 6 innings, just an earned run allowed, and that's against an offense that has been pretty good lately. So you feel good about Burgert, and it's a nice reminder as we see him do that, Tommy, that no matter what happens here, no matter what happens in this season, what happens, you know, the rest of the way, whether they can make it or not, they were able to lock up Seth Lugo, and we hope and assume he'll be healthy by next year, whatever it is that's going on with him right now. They were able to do that. They were able to add Burgert to that rotation. So they'll be starting a rotation next year with Lugo, Waka, you hope Reagans is back, Burgert, and Cameron. And like, so let that sink in. And you're starting a lineup with Bobby Witt Jr. and Salvador Perez and Vinny Pasquantino and Michael Garcia. Like, everything's going to be okay, and everything is still pointed upward. Whether or not they can get through this will be, you know, it's overcoming the offense getting off to such a horrendous start for half the season. And whether they do or they don't, the future remains bright. But it's going to take that offense that put them so far behind the eight ball being otherworldly, I think, for them to get there. And they're obviously showing us signs of that lately.
Yeah, going back to Ryan Burgert, Nick Cappell, who is the Royals Director of Media Relations, put this out last night that before 2025, there was one pitcher in Royals history that started off his career with the Royals with 5 consecutive starts with more than 5 innings and less than 2 runs in each of those starts. And that was Steve Busby all the way back in 1972. He had 5. Now we've also had 2 more in 2025. Noah Cameron did it earlier this season, and Ryan Burgert has now done it. So you've got 2 really young pitchers that have been stellar in the rotation for Kansas City when they've started off their career with the Royals. And so it only happened one other time in the history of the franchise, and it happened right after the franchise was founded and launched. And now you've had 2 in the same season in Cameron and Burgert. And so, to your point, the future is bright in that rotation, but it's not just about the future. It's about the present as well. And they've got the guys in place. If they can keep this up and continue, I mean, they've got a positive run differential for the first time in several months. It might end up being too little too late for Kansas City, but they're not out of the picture. They're not out of the hunt.
No, I mean, it's still unlikely. It's still on every game that the Red Sox, the Yankees, and the Mariners win makes it less likely. That's what sucks, because those are all three good teams. Now they do get the game. You know, there is a possibility in a world, Tommy, I think, where you get into this and it's kind of like, well, what happens in that Seattle series? Right? Because that's where you can control. That's the only series left on their schedule where they control things against the teams they're chasing. So you have that. And then everything else is going to depend on them losing games, right? Like it's not anything that the Royals can control. So I don't think you even worry about that, though. You just continue to try to chip away at this thing and hope that it's enough, but it may not be. It's a series against Detroit. It's a series that just kicked your tail in Detroit. You get it at Kauffman Stadium. Go win that series. Tarek Skubal is going to pitch in that series. Go win that series anyway, right? You get Waka going up against him. You take your chances. Then it's the Angels who have been reeling a little bit lately. Then it's the Twins. Then it's the Guardians who have been reeling a little bit lately. And we'll look at those, you know, 10 games as a critical spot. Because after that, it's Philly, Seattle, and Toronto. Like, it's going big picture right now is tough. Break it down piece by piece. Playing three games against Detroit feels like enough to worry about without looking at anything else. Go win two of those three and then, you know, attack the next one when the opportunity presents itself.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the benefits of the schedule coming up for Kansas City, I know they've got Detroit. I know they've got Seattle. I know they've got the Phillies. They've got good teams coming up in their remaining games. But you also get the Angels for six. And the Angels are a disappointing team. They're a team that you mentioned, I think the word reeling was what you just used. So you need to take advantage of the series and the games against the teams that you are better than. And there are not a lot of them left on the schedule, but the Angels and playing six against the Angels, three at home and three on the road, you've got to start, you know, taking advantage of that. The fact that they were able to at least get two of three from the White Sox, they should have swept them, but still that's five of six against a team that you've played in the last couple of weeks, the White Sox, where you're 5-1 against them. You need to do that same sort of thing against the Angels, you know, and you can't drop games against teams that you're objectively better than. Now that you're back at home against Detroit, the goal should be getting 2 of 3 from Detroit as opposed to 1 of 3. Like the opportunities are getting less and less and less because you're running out of games. And so you've got to take advantage where you can. I'm hopeful that because of the way that we saw the Royals come back late in the game on Tuesday against Chicago, when they were on the verge of losing that game and they were down several runs late in the game and they come back and they end up beating the White Sox, I'm hopeful that that opened up the floodgates a little bit. We saw them lay it on in last night's game offensively. The pitching was really good in last night's game. Hopefully that can continue on in this weekend series against the Tigers. One other quick thing. I didn't realize, because it kind of flies under the radar, I didn't realize how good John Schreiber has been over the last month or so. That guy has been absolutely lights out in like his last 10 or 11 appearances. I think he's given up like one earned run in those appearances. He has been rock solid. He doesn't get the kind of accolades that guys like Estevez and Urcic do, but he has been a key contributor in that bullpen. They're probably going to need him this weekend.
Oh, he's been awesome. And he deserves all the credit in the world. He's been a stabilizing force for them, and he's kept it to a bullpen that is a weapon and not a problem. So I totally agree. They play those games starting tomorrow. So you've got 7:10 tomorrow, 6:15 national television broadcast on Saturday. I'll actually be at the Saturday game, getting the family and the in-laws up there.
Will we see you on TV? Will you be in the crowd? Will I get to, you know, see you on TV?
If the cameras can stay away from me, and I think we all know that's a problem. So there's a pretty good chance.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
Pretty good chance. And then on Sunday, it'll be day baseball, 1 o'clock. Waka Skubal, can't miss that. That will be fantastic. There, I'll probably be, might be driving home. I got to figure out how I'm going to be consuming that game. But it'll be a fun series either way. I really hope that it's not the series that derails things. That to me, like, that's a playoff vibe. I don't know how crowded it's going to be. It won't be packed because I think tickets are still reasonable. But it should be pretty dang intense. And all I know is you give my son a chance for the get loud portion of a game, and he's going to get loud. And it'll be fun. It'll be fun to get there. And come on, Royals. We need at least one more week out of you here. We got a week until the NFL starts. We need that. Can you give us that? No, I think they'll give us more than that. I think they'll hang into this thing pretty much down to the wire. If they don't get in, it'll be that close. But those games happen at that point. All right, let's see. Let's give away some HTO here, Tommy. Let's give you a free cup of tea right now. All you got to do is text the keyword tea to 20357. That gets you a free iced tea from either East Wichita, West Wichita, or in Derby. More than 20 flavors to choose from. Lots of stuff coming with HTO. New flavors launching over the next week. We'll talk about that as they launch. I don't think I'm technically allowed to tell you what they are, but they should be a lot of fun. I think people will be excited. But go get your free cup of tea. Go inside, see what it's all about. Tea, 20357. I think that covers our giveaways today. So set you up for the next hour, Tommy. We are going to get to Tim Fitzgerald in the second hour to talk K-State. We get Dylan Edwards news yesterday that we've got to get to, that he looks like he'll miss the next two games. So we'll get what Fitz has been hearing about that. We'll recap his trip to Ireland and look ahead to North Dakota. We've also got PJ Glasser coming in the next segment. I'm getting all these promotions for college football bets, Tommy, and I got no idea what bets to place in college football. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. KU and K-State are spreads that are outrageous. There's some marquee games, and I don't know what to do with them. Hopefully PJ does, and he'll enlighten us in the next hour. It's all coming, and we'll recap the Rashee Rice news as well. Stick around. We got more Sports Daily right after this. All right, welcome back in, everybody. It's Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster. We're with you another hour here on the program. Glad to be with you. It's a big hour. We've got PJ Glasser, our betting insider, coming up. We've got Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider, coming up. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, featuring Yumkin Pumpkin Ale, WBC's most popular seasonal beer that's made with actual pumpkin and served with a spice rim. Yumkin Pumpkin, now available at Wichita Brewing Company, pizza and beer made here. Welcome back in, everybody. Tommy, before we get to our guest, the two big news items of the day are, they are that Dylan Edwards is going to potentially miss some time, and they are that Rashee Rice is going to possibly miss some time. Two kind of buzzkill-y stories. Let's get real quick, and we'll get more into this with Fitz. Dylan Edwards. So Pete Thamel, and we told you this yesterday, reporting those first couple of, he's not going to play this week, then maybe not against Army. I think what gets really curious is, what do they do with Arizona then? Do they just wait until, because then they get a bye week? Do they just wait for the conference season at this point? I'm fearful that it's a very significant injury. I'm hopeful that they're just playing safe, and maybe Fitz knows a little bit more, but it's a little worrisome to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think the critical thing is to make sure that he's back to be able to play the conference games, because that's really the only path for the Wildcats. They've got to get to the Big 12 title game with that loss in Ireland last week. They're behind the eight ball a little bit. Their backs are up against the wall. They've got to be able to get enough conference wins to be able to make their way to the Big 12 title game. And so I totally understand shutting him down for this game this weekend, because really it doesn't matter. And then honestly, the Army game doesn't particularly matter either. And so I would shut him down for that. Arizona, correct me if I'm wrong, that doesn't count as a conference game this year, right? So that game doesn't even really particularly matter. So I wouldn't be surprised at all, and it wouldn't upset me one bit if Chris Klieman is like, look, we're going to shut him down until Big 12 play. I don't expect him in the game this weekend. Don't expect him in the Army game, and don't expect him against Arizona. We've got to have him back and ready to go. Well, I know he's not going to say that, but it wouldn't upset me if he did, because those games are insignificant compared to once you get to the conference opener and all of that, because you have to win as many conference games as you can. That's the only path for the Wildcats to get to the Big 12 title game.
You can't, as a coach and a coaching staff, you can't think that that's the only path. Like, we can think that because we know what kind of gauntlet it's going to be.
I mean, it is the only path. You may not want to think it, but it is the only path.
Not if you're the coaches. If you're the coaches, you expect to win every game you play. I think for sure these two make sense because they should be able to win these games without Dylan Edwards. Arizona becomes the interesting one because it's a road game, and even though it's not a conference game, when you think about, you know, being a top eight team, right? We had eight. How many playoff teams are we at? Eight. When you're thinking about being a top eight team, like or 12.
12. We're at 12.
Yeah, we're at 12 teams. When you're thinking about being a top 12 team, like, you only have one loss right now. If you roll through the next two games, Arizona on the road is a good resume win. Like, when the dust settles, like, if you look really good the next couple of weeks and you're feeling good and you think, okay, we might lose one more conference game, two losses is probably getting you into the CFP, right? I think as coaches, you can't, like, if you have two losses, like, if they were to go through the rest of the season, lose one more game and have two losses, they would get in. And maybe if you have two and then lose a Big 12 championship game. So I don't. It is way too early to say the season's over as far as an at-large bid. You can't think of it
they're
that
not,
way. This
they're not getting an at-large bid. We've talked about that at length. Like,
I'm talking about from making a decision with Dylan Edwards. Like, you and I can say that. But the coaches aren't going to think that. They're not going to think, there's no way we're going to get an at-large bid. We lost the first game of the year. Like, they can't. I hope they're not thinking that way. I hope that they think they can go win every game they play. And the reality is, they're not, Tommy, there's not going to be a game on their schedule, probably, where they're more than a 6 or 7 point underdog, if at all, at any point, if Avery Johnson's healthy, right? Like, that's that. So while it's a daunting task to think about doing it over the course of a season, like, they're not going to go play any game in the Big 12 where they're a massive underdog, where you don't think they have a chance to win.
No, my point is that not only do, and this isn't a knock on Kansas State, not only do I think that it's extremely... not only do I think it's extremely unlikely that the Wildcats can get a at-large bid, I think it's extremely unlikely any Big 12 team is going to get an at-large bid. And so, look, I understand if you're a coach, you want to try to, like, feel like you can win every single game and you'll get the respect nationally to get an at-large bid. Let's be realistic and not look at it through rose-colored glasses, especially with the loss against Iowa State. Kansas State's path is to win enough conference games to find their way back in the Big 12 title game. That's it. Like, that's their path. And it sucks that that's the case, but that's the reality of it. Now, I guess there's a scenario where if they go undefeated the rest of the way and they lose in the Big 12 championship, that would be two losses. Maybe they would get an at-large bid at that point. But that's so, I think, off the table and unlikely that will even happen at this point. Like, I really don't think, like, you drop one more game and then you lose a Big 12 championship game potentially. That's three losses. You're not getting an at-large bid in the conference of the Big 12. That's not going to happen. Their margin of error is so slim right now, at large or not. Their path is to get to a Big 12 title game. That's really the way it is right now.
I agree. But and this is where the real question comes. How hurt is Dylan Edwards? Or are they playing it safe for these two games? If they're just playing it safe for these two games because they know they can win them without him, then you play him against Arizona, right? If it's a significant injury, then you have to reevaluate at that point. But what I don't think they need to do is sit here on August 28th and say, let's just hold him out through Arizona, unless it's very serious.
Yeah, and they're not going to make that decision, right? But it wouldn't surprise me if he didn't play in that game. Because here's the thing, like, you just mentioned the fact that going on the road at Arizona is a good resume builder. And while on paper that may be true, it doesn't matter because they're not building a resume for an at-large bid. They're not going to get an at-large bid, in my opinion. And so it really, at the end of the day, it's an inconsequential game because it's not likely to happen that they'll get an at-large bid anyway. So knowing that that's not a conference game this season, I think you need to push all of your chips to the middle of the table for the conference season. And if that means holding Dylan Edwards out for Arizona, then that's what that means. We have no idea the severity of this injury, the significance of it. We just know that this week he's not playing, and more than likely next week he's not playing. Beyond that, we don't have any idea.
Yeah, and we'll find out. We'll see if Fitz knows the latest on the injury. The other big news yesterday, Rashee Rice, 6 games. So we went through, you know, how it happened, all the process. Now we look at those 6 games, and this is a part of where when we were just making NFL predictions in the last hour, I'm going to right now, for now, give the slight nod to the Ravens or another. This is the first year in a long time I haven't picked the Chiefs, and it's because I think their margin for error, 6 games is significant. 6 games without Royals, 6 games we've already seen Hollywood Brown get hurt. I think that there is at least a decent, if not good, chance they're going to be hurting at the position for some stretch of this 6 games where they're going to be dealing with it. They'll have to work through it until we see it. Like, could they, if they only had Xavier Worthy and Hollywood Brown and Juju and Kelsey, was that enough? Yes, that's enough. Of course that's enough. What are the chances though they'll have all those guys for 6 games? And I think that's where, for me, it's like that their margins just early in the year seem really, really slim, and they play some really brutal games. So if they lose 2 or 3 of those, it's going to be tough to get that home field throughout.
I think it becomes a really, really smart decision in retrospect for them to hold out Hollywood Brown in the preseason. Like, you had to make sure that he was protected and healthy to enter this season. And by all accounts, he is. But I think that was a really, really smart thing to do, to keep him on ice because of the history and what happened in the last preseason, and knowing what they're up against in the first 6 games without Rashee Rice and potentially, at least for some period of time, maybe without Jalen Royals. And that's the other thing too, is that while Jalen Royals is penciled into the depth chart, we don't know what his effectiveness is going to be. He's a rookie. It's, you know, the same thing that we didn't know about Xavier Worthy a season ago and Rashee Rice 2 years ago. We didn't really have that information at the time. So regardless of his health, he may have not been a large part of the offense right away anyway. So I think that knowing that they've had Rice now, we know that's going to be 6 games. Royals potentially might be on the shelf for a period of time. Knowing that they were able to keep Hollywood Brown healthy during the preseason, knowing that Xavier Worthy is ascending and good to go, and, you know, an unlocked Travis Kelce may be a really huge thing for them. I'm not sure that the margins are quite as small as you think they are in the first 6 weeks. I think they're less than what they would have been with Rice on the field, but I still think they've got a pretty good margin in those 6 games.
They always have.
Because remember, that personnel that they're going to be entering the season with is the same personnel that they went to the Super Bowl with.
I get it. And then I think to all the regular season games they won by, like, literal lucky bounces. And I just, I'm real high on that offense when they get to week 7. I just want to see it for a minute. You know, I want to see Hollywood in that expanded role and everything else. I think they're going to be a good offense. It's the defense, honestly, that I worry about more than anything. But anywho, that's the news there. When we come back, we'll see if BJ Glasser thinks that news changes any outlooks or anything with the Chiefs. We'll talk about all the bets. Get you ready for a full weekend of college football. How about that? That's next on Sports Nation.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year, Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And look who it is. It's our pal PJ Glasser, back for the first time in a while. We are ready to just talk some betting. God, it's been way too long. He's the host of Send It In and Inside the Betting Lines on the BetMGM Network. Your Ravens are, you know, they're going to win the Super Bowl. All the things are going to come true for you here in late August. PJ, how you feeling?
I'm feeling good, guys. I'm looking at you, right? So that's how I know it's football season, which is awesome. We got 17 college games today. We got five straight days of football. Week one's next Thursday in the NFL. So it's awesome. Great time of year and great to have football back.
The big marquee matchup tonight, PJ, is just up the road from us in Kansas City at Arrowhead Stadium, Nebraska, and Cincinnati. Is there anything you like in this big game tonight?
Yeah, you know, this at certain books, guys, the line, depending on where you look, is either Nebraska 6.5 or Nebraska -7. I think if you can grab a Cincinnati at +7, I think that's probably the side tonight. You mentioned it, Tommy, games at Arrowhead, so should be kind of a de facto home game for Nebraska. They're definitely going to travel well to that game. But look, as you guys know, I mean, Nebraska the last decade, it feels like, has just had so much trouble winning one score games. And even though I really like them this year, it's year three of Matt Rhule. You look at whenever he's at a program, whether it's been at Temple, whether it's been at Baylor, when it's year three, that's when his teams really tend to take off. I think the Cornhuskers could have a really good season, but that doesn't mean that tonight's game's not going to be close. Cincinnati's got a pretty good defense. So if you can grab a +7 with the Bearcats tonight, I think that game's coming down to the wire. I like Cincinnati +7.
That one's tonight, Cincinnati +7. I'm taking notes here, PJ, because right now, I don't know how you feel about this. And like all these sites, like I feel like there are some advantages to checking them all because they're all trying to win our business. So there are all these bonus bets and boosters and everything out there early in the season is kind of good money making time in this. The problem is with college football, to me, and I don't have a clue what these teams are going to be. The NFL, we have a pretty good idea early. In college, like all the transfers and everything else, my goodness. So what are we looking at in this first week? Maybe in these marquee games, and then we'll get some of your favorite bets. But even because that's what people are going to want to bet, that's where a lot of the boosters are going to be. These absolute marquee games, what do you like? And we can start with the early one, Texas at Ohio State, 11 a.m. kick from Columbus.
Yeah, look, guys, I mean, the way that I handicap week one in college football really hasn't changed all that much. It's obviously become more difficult with the transfer portal and NIL and all the moving pieces that we get now every offseason. But for me, it's really all about coaching. And because there's no preseason in college football, you're really relying on these coaches to have their teams ready, especially in these marquee games. And if you kind of go back and look through the history of when these coaches have been at these schools and how their teams have performed, usually either the teams play really well to start the season or they don't play well to start the season. You know, Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, always great bets at the beginning of the year. Brian Kelly and LSU, a game that I know we'll get into here in a little bit. He's lost five straight season openers. So you have Ryan Day versus Sark in this first matchup. And it feels like the whole world is on Texas in this game, fellas, right? Number one team in the country. You're getting plus money. Haven't heard much Ohio State love. And I understand why. Ohio State has to replace both of their coordinators. You got a true freshman, Julian Sayin, coming in at quarterback. It's a revenge game for Texas. And you think about how Texas has been the last couple of years in these early season games, right? Last year, they go to Ann Arbor. They beat up on Michigan. The year before that, going to Tuscaloosa, beat Bama by two scores. But also think back to last year and think about Texas, who had a great team again last season. They played Georgia twice, lost both of those games. Then we get to the college football playoff. They need a 4th-and-13 in overtime to beat ASU. And then they play Ohio State and they lose to the Buckeyes. So in their biggest games, Michigan, obviously, at the end of the year, they lose that one. Or excuse me, that was Ohio State. The biggest games of the year for Texas, they really lost just about all those games. Whereas Ohio State, after the loss to Michigan, everybody was counting them out. They turn around and they beat up on Tennessee. And then the following week, you know, they played Oregon, who was undefeated. And nobody liked him in that game, and Ohio State took care of business. So when the Buckeyes are kind of counted out and nobody likes them in a game, that's when they tend to usually play pretty well. They might have the best player in the country in Jeremiah Smith. They might have the two best players in the country with Caleb Downs on the other side as safety. I've been going back and forth on this game, but I think now getting Ohio State at close to a pick 'em, I like the Buckeyes minus 120.
Let's move on to the game in the middle of the afternoon. You mentioned Brian Kelly, his Tigers at LSU on the road, taking on Dabo Swinney and Clemson. Right now, I mean, it's a coin flip. Just over a field goal, I guess, 3.5-point favorites Clemson are. What do you like in this game?
Man, I like LSU, fellas. I told you that Brian Kelly and LSU have lost five straight season openers, but that's become such a storyline, and I think it's such a motivation tool now for LSU to use in this game that, they have one of the best quarterbacks in the country, Garrett Nussmeier. They have terrific receivers, great running back, offensive line's very good. The defense isn't what we're used to with LSU or maybe what we saw 7, 8, 9 years ago, but I think it's going to be improved from what it's been the last couple of years. And even though this is probably Dabo's best team that he's had in about 5 or 6 years, I still think Cade Klubnik is a touch overrated. He played the game of his career against Texas in the college football playoff, but if you go back and look, any marquee game that Cade Klubnik has played in before that one really hasn't played all that well. So I think everybody's just kind of forgetting about what he looked like before that Texas game, and I don't think he's going to be as great as maybe as people are expecting him to be in that game or this season. And that game reminds me a lot of the Notre Dame A&M game from last season, guys, where A&M was at home to start the season. They were a 3-point favorite. The big storyline going into that game was Notre Dame had 4 new offensive linemen, just like LSU does in this game against a great pass rush for Clemson. But Notre Dame had a veteran quarterback in Riley Leonard. They figured it out. LSU has one in Garrett Nussmeier. I think they figured it out as well. I think LSU goes into Clemson and beats them outright. So I like the Tigers in that one. I like the LSU Tigers in that one.
You mentioned Notre Dame. They start the season again with another marquee matchup at a true road game at Miami, 6-10. A lot of love for Miami this year, but they're home dogs in this one. Does that surprise you, and what do you like?
Not really, no. I do like Notre Dame in the game. I'd take them on the money line, guys, at minus 135. For me, Notre Dame's one of the best teams in the country. The only question mark I really have is the quarterback position. They're starting a true freshman in CJ Carr. I think they have the best running back in America in Jeremiah Love, experienced receiving core, great offensive line, great defense, great head coach in Marcus Freeman that obviously proved he could win big games last season. And I've just seen Mario Cristobal team in enough games like this to know that they can be competitive, but they usually don't end up winning. Carson Beck comes over as his quarterback, and they had to replace a lot on both sides of the ball. Now, they're still extremely talented, and they have 2 great pass rushers. But I think all those moving parts for Miami in a first game like this, and Notre Dame got experience playing in a monster game last year against A&M that I think will help them. I like the Irish on the road, minus 135.
Little reunion of Catholics and convicts in that game on Sunday night. The finale in week one in college football. The debut of Bill Belichick in Chapel Hill. North Carolina, TCU comes to town. Now, neither one of these teams are ranked, but it's the finale on Labor Day. And, you know, Belichick starts off his North Carolina career as a home dog. What do you like in that one?
I like the under, fellas. I like under 56.5. It's come down from 58.5. I think anything good to 55, though, is playable. We're all fascinated to see how this is going to play out, right? We have no idea what Belichick's going to look like in the college game. I think the one thing, though, if you were to feel good about something, is that his defense is going to be prepared. They're going to scheme well, and they're going to play well. Offensively, no idea what they're going to look like. Freddie Kitchens, the old Browns head coach, is the OC for Belichick in North Carolina. He just named his quarterback yesterday. So I think the offense is going to be a work in progress, which obviously helps our under. And then I think the defense is going to be solid because, as we know, Belichick's one of the great defensive minds ever in the history of football. So I don't know if the market's quite caught up to that yet. I still think there's some value on 56.5, so I like under in TCU, North Carolina.
All right, let's switch over to the NFL. We get the Rashee Rice news yesterday. PJ, the Chiefs are not the favorite to win the Super Bowl. I put the two futures I liked are the Chiefs and the Lions. This changes maybe the Chiefs a little bit. Your Ravens are actually my Super Bowl pick. We just made in the last hour. Where are you on any of those futures, any betting values, anything to attack there?
Yeah, I mean, look, Kansas City, it feels like they're definitely getting disrespected for the first time in a long time. I think people are built into the market a little bit is that maybe the Ravens and the Bills are just due, right? Like at some point, when as good as Josh and Lamar are, like at some point, they'll just get by Mahomes and the Chiefs. But maybe they just won't, guys. Maybe they just won't. Kansas City will just continue to win. And because the Chiefs have been to three straight Super Bowls, it's so hard to continue to get back every single year. They continue to get older. I think there's motivation for them after the way that that Super Bowl went against Philadelphia and not even coming close to winning that Super Bowl and getting the three-peat. I think there's motivation for them to have a good regular season, and they know how important getting the one seed is. If I'm choosing between the Ravens and the Bills as kind of those other teams, Jacob, I'd probably lean more so towards Buffalo just because their schedule is so easy. And they get the Ravens and Chiefs at home this year. And we know between those three teams, probably one of them is going to get the one seed. For Buffalo, the fact that you get both of those teams at home obviously plays into their advantage. They're going to be favorites in both of those games. So I like Buffalo between them and Baltimore just because I think the Bills get the one seed this year. And obviously, if the Bills are playing at home, you got to like them a lot better than if they go on the road. I still think Kansas City comes out of the AFC, though. I still like the Chiefs there. The Lions, I definitely have my concerns about. It's not only the fact that they lost both Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn, both their coordinators, but also the other coaches that those guys brought with them, right? So they really have to retool the entire coaching staff. And Goff lost his center. Frank Ragnow is one of the best centers in the league. We know Goff's not a mobile guy. So losing your center, who is the signal caller on the offensive line, I think that's going to be a big deal as well. The Rams were my pick out of the NFC. The Stafford injury and news is definitely making me a little concerned. But I think it's going to be one of those NFC West teams. I think San Francisco could have a big bounce back year, or I think it could be the Rams. Though one of those two teams would be the ones that I would look at probably to be the NFC representative.
It's always interesting, PJ, when you look at win totals that Vegas sets for each team, where they've got, you know, a lot of these teams that are contenders or even teams that they feel like are going to take a step forward. Is there good value on any teams, maybe not even contenders necessarily, but teams that might be taking a step forward that you like the over in their win totals?
Guys, I really like the Raiders this year. And it was at 6.5 for a little bit, but now it's at 7.5. The Raiders finally got a grown-up as their head coach, right? It's no more Jack Del Rio. It's no more Josh McDaniels, Antonio Pierce. They brought in Pete Carroll. And we know Pete Carroll's won a Super Bowl. He did a great job in Seattle. only one time in his career with the Seahawks did they lose. Did they win fewer than seven games, I should say. Now, obviously, the roster was a lot better in Seattle, and his defense was way better. But offensively, I think you got to like the pieces that they have, right? They get Genty in the draft. Bowers is one of the best young tight ends in football. And we talk all the time, Jared Goff and how great he is indoors. I don't think people realize how great Geno Smith has been indoors. He played 14 career games with Seattle in a dome. And he had 30 touchdowns and five interceptions in those games. He had a passer rating of like 111. The Raiders also went 0-6 last year in divisional games. Even though the AFC West, as we know, is going to be a really good division, I think they're going to win at least two probably divisional games. So I think that'll help them. But I just think the upgrade in head coach, quarterback, you have a great running back, a great tight end. The defense is obviously the big question mark. Max Crosby's really the only piece that you look at on that side of the ball and be like, that's a guy that you can win with. If the defense can get better, and they were really hurt by injury last year, guys, outside of the Lions, the Raiders were the team that was affected most by injury on defense. I think the Raiders could potentially be a dark horse playoff team in the AFC, but I definitely like their win total over 7.5.
What do you think about the Cowboys? Always in the news, PJ. Dak Prescott doesn't ever not win eight games, like in his career. There, I believe they're still at 7.5. That to me seems like a screaming value because there's such a long track record of when Dak plays, they win 10 games or they win eight games or more.
Totally agree with you. Like Dallas is over as well. Because, Jacob, look, I mean, the perception with Dak and Dallas is the playoffs, right? People kind of forget about how good they are in the regular season, that whenever it comes up about Dak, it's, oh, he's the highest paid player in the NFL and he can't win in the playoffs. Well, for the win total, I don't care about the playoffs. Can he get me 8 or 9 wins, right, in the regular season? That's all I care about. They got George Pickens to help out CeeDee Lamb. Obviously, they got to get Micah Parsons out there, and I think they will. I mean, Jerry has a track record of kind of doing deals late, right before the season starts. So I think Micah's going to get signed. I think that's going to be fine. But Dallas has good players at all the important positions. You know, they got an above-average quarterback. They got two good receivers. They got good linemen, and they got one of the elite pass rushers in the league as well. Schottenheimer is obviously the big X factor. We have no idea what to expect out of him as head coach, but I'm with you, man. I think people forget how good Dak is as a regular season quarterback. I'm not betting Dallas to go to the Super Bowl, win the NFC, anything like that, but regular season, yeah, I'll back Dak. I'll take the over.
All right. PJ, we appreciate it. Anything else in the last 30 seconds we have with you tonight that is a must bet?
Yeah, I like USF tonight, guys. I think that's the game of the night is Boise and USF. Obviously, Boise without Genty, what are they going to look like? I think that first game flying across the country against a very good group of five team, I think they're on upset alert tonight. So I'd take some USF plus the points. I'd look at some money line as well. USF's good. They got a really good quarterback in Byron Brown. I think the Bulls pull off the upset.
There it is. That's what we're talking about for your Thursday night action. PJ, so glad to have you back on board this year. We will talk again next week, and we'll be previewing NFL games, and I cannot wait.
Can't wait, guys. Good to see you. Talk again next week.
There goes PJ Glasser.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
It is Tim Fitzgerald now joining us, fresh from the homeland. Fitz, it's not the ending we wanted out of the trip to Ireland, but I imagine it was still a pretty great experience to be there.
Oh, it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. I haven't talked to anyone who regrets going despite the outcome of the game. And I'd like to point out that it's currently like 66, overcast and very humid. We brought home the weather, man. This is exactly how it is almost every morning in Ireland year round.
I love it. I think, you know, simply put, as we're coming off of that game, my main question, and I think everybody's question, is where do the Wildcats go from here?
Yeah, you just have to, you know, kind of restart. And you know, people ask me why, and I asked Chris Kleiman this, didn't you take an open week coming back from Ireland and, you know, let your team recoup a little bit? And he said the coaches he spoke with that have been in this game, particularly if you lose, but both win or lose, you want to get back at it. You don't want to have that gap. If you win, you want to keep going. If you lose, you don't want that to stick around. So this was part of his plan, and we'll see if it works out. They did alter their schedule slightly to help the players adjust with their jet lag or possible jet lag, and we'll see if they look sharp on Saturday night.
Fitz, the news right now outside of the loss, and we'll get into, you know, the takeaways from that game, but the news at hand is Dylan Edwards.
Yeah.
He's never able to return. Pete Thamel reporting yesterday that it's doubtful, or that he's out and then doubtful. What is your reporting on it? What is your take on the Edwards injury, and how do you see this thing going?
There's a moment during the melee to get the ball. He's being tackled and the ball's bouncing away. The tackler's leg appears to bend his ankle backwards, like hyperextending it by pulling it downward. It's real quick, but they think that's when it happened. And I've never had that injury. I've sprained plenty of ankles, but I've never done that. And I would imagine it makes it very difficult to push off, which is kind of important for a guy of his speed. But they're going to make sure he gets healed up. They need him for conference play. So they hope to have him for Arizona, which is non-conference game, but a conference opponent. And certainly I think if he can't go then, he'll have a week off and be ready for the remainder of the Big 12 slate. They've got to have him out there.
You know, it's interesting to me because we know how sloppy the play was between both teams with different mistakes and fumbles and all of that throughout the course of the ball game. And some of that you can chalk it up to the weather and the conditions and all of that. But really, when you also look at penalties and mistakes in that regard, Kansas State had a lot of them. Iowa State really had none. I think they had one penalty in the entire game. What was your takeaway on the way that those two teams executed from a discipline perspective? It seemed like Matt Campbell had his guys playing pretty clean football.
Yeah, very efficient in the terms of they converted all three fourth down attempts, which really was the difference in the game. And you mentioned, I think K-State had six penalties. Iowa State had one, and it was a kickoff infraction, which came from probably slipping, trying to plant your foot on the muddy, loose turf. So, that little things in a close game, little things make all the difference in the world. It looked like turnovers were going to break Kansas State, but Iowa State gave it right back. So, again, K-State's got to come back and start playing cleaner football and maybe with a little more fire. I thought they were kind of mechanical at times during this game.
Yeah, but the weather, like, it felt like in the second half things opened up a little bit. I know the fourth down conversions didn't go their way. I just am trying to figure out no Dylan Edwards, because we're going to see that probably the next couple of weeks. Like, what is the offense? Is it more pass heavy? Is Avery going to start to pick up some more carries in that? Because so much of the explosion of this offense, I think we felt like was going to come from him. So if he's not there, what does that look like now?
We'll find out. I mean, it was kind of mundane in Dublin, but then again, they prepared their entire game plan off on the offensive side of the ball for Dylan Edwards, and there's really no one to replicate those plays. He's such a unique talent in some of the things he can do. So a lot of what they prepared went out the window, and they had to call plays on the fly. And we'll see how they attack it this week. They'll have better time to prepare some of their young running backs. They've got a group of freshmen, a couple redshirt freshmen that they really like, and we'll see if they see plenty of playing time in this contest because you just don't know. Dylan Edwards' injury might be something that gets re-aggravated, so you better plan ahead to be playing without him.
Let's talk about a positive, though, Fitz. One of the big takeaways, I thought the defensive front looked phenomenal in that game. Of course, led the way by Tomi Osunami. I thought he looked really great with two sacks, and there were other guys that were able to get into the backfield as well. Do you feel like that's something that can be carried on and continue throughout the entire season?
I asked Chris Kleiman on Monday if this was the four-man front was a move to address Iowa State, or is this a seasonal change? And he said they're doing it the whole season. They'll still do use a three-man front on occasion, but they felt like their defense functions a lot better going back to the four-man front, a traditional 4-3-4. And that's just kind of tracking the movement of the Big 12. It went from a little more wide open passing and a lot of speed football to power running games that the three-man front wasn't handling very well. So now they've swung back around, as college football will do, and as to address the changing styles. And I liked what I saw. It certainly helps them a lot on pass downs, getting after the quarterback. And K-State's pressure was really good in that first half.
Fitz, what do we know, if anything, about North Dakota? I think I get a little nervous anytime I see a directional Dakota or a Montana involved, that they probably are going to not be bad teams. What are they? The something Hawks, like the Battle Hawks, or
they're fighting Hawks, man. Which, yeah. Hawks, wear gloves and fight quite often. They're probably the weakest of the Dakota schools this year. Well, they are, but that doesn't say much. They're picked for the middle of the Missouri Valley. They have a new coach. Being picked for the middle of the Valley in football is like being picked for the middle of the SEC. I mean, it's clearly the best conference in the FCS level. They always have teams hovering around the championship, if not two of them playing for it. In fact, the Valley is more dominant than the SEC is at this level. So, this is a pretty good team. They got some talent. They've been retooled by their new coach, so there's going to be some things that are going to be hard to figure out what they're going to do. But I think this is a game where K-State needs to worry about K-State the most. And just go out there and attack what you see on the field and try to solve some of these problems. Because if they're going to be this sloppy and uninspired and not pay attention to details, this team's going to get in big trouble real fast. So I hate to say it this way, but Kansas State kind of needs to come out and take the fight to the Hawks and just really have a blowout, or at least one that feels that pure domination. They probably need that for their confidence.
Once things finally kind of started to open up in that game against Iowa State in the second half, offensively for the Wildcats, we saw the passing game for Avery Johnson have a lot more success. And we saw, the wide receivers have success as well, obviously. How did you feel about the way that, like Jaron Tibbs and Jaron Bradley and all, how do you feel like they performed in that game? And do you think that, again, that's something that can carry on?
Yeah. I mean, Avery Johnson completed 70% of his passes, playing half of football in the rain and when the ball was extremely slippery and the surface was slippery. So there were some drops and a few overthrows, but for the most part, he was on the money, particularly throwing it downfield. Every deep ball he threw was on the mark. One was well defended, a pass to Jace Brown, and he got it down the field. That Jaron Bradley, touchdown was really impressive. He put it way out there. I think the defense didn't think Avery was going to get it that deep. And, of course, the beautiful double move by Jace down the middle of the field that broke him open, and Avery just laid it in there. So I saw some really positive things from Avery in the passing game, not so much in the running game, and that gives him something to work on.
It gives him something to work on. They don't have a ton of time. If Tim Fitzgerald had to make the call right now, do we see Dylan Edwards at Arizona in a few weeks?
I'm going to guess no. And granted, they did not mention that, but that might be remember, he had a kick return or punt return against Arizona last year, so it might be to make sure Arizona's preparing for him, even if he's not playing, spending some time in practice, because you better believe they're aware of what Dylan Edwards can do.
And then the follow to that, if not, do we see him September 27th in the first Big 12, well, in the next Big 12 game, yeah. I should say, against UCF?
I've made that mistake, too. Yes, I do. I think, because remember, there's an off week in there. So there's going to be some healing up. It's a well-placed off week after four games and, two against conference opponents, even if one is a non-con game. So Kansas State's going to need that. And because of playing in Ireland in week zero, they get an extra off week. And I think that'll come to very good use when it gets into the heart of the season and you need to do some healing up.
If we're being honest, any regret to starting the season that way overseas against a team like Iowa State?
No, I don't sense any from the administration or the program. In fact, they discussed to do it again. The outcome wasn't what they wanted, but the experience was. And as Chris Kleiman said, I took a bunch of young men over there to Ireland, and a lot of them will never have another experience to leave the country to go to Europe. And he wants to do it in the future, but not too soon, because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of stress on the program. But I think everyone who went, including the team, does not regret a thing other than the loss.
All right, Fitz, what do you guys have going for us to go PowerCat?
We got so much cooking. I mean, we've rolled out a whole bunch of new VIP coverage this year, and we 24/7 just flipped us to 75% off overnight. And so if you're not a subscriber to Go PowerCat, it's the time. Our coverage has gone to a new level. We're doing a whole bunch of new stuff that really digs in deep on this team. 75% off right now for an annual subscription at Go PowerCat.
There you go. K-State fans, get after it. Tim Fitzgerald, publisher of GoPowerCat.com. Glad to have you back stateside, Fitz. Glad you didn't decide, you know what, I'm going to stay there with my people. Welcome home.
Hey, it's good to be home.
There he is, Tim Fitzgerald. Fitz, we'll talk again next week. Oh, Tommy, you ready to pick K-State minus 27? And what did you tell me yesterday KU is at? Because I'm not seeing them listed, like 45?
46 and a half is what the Kansas game is. I'm less excited to pick that game. I wouldn't mind. I mean, I think out of the two, I'd rather pick K-State than picking Kansas at 46 and a half.
K-State's playing a much better opponent, though. I don't know, man. Like, there's going to be – you watch. There's going to be a narrative starting. Like, K-State's opening the season – against much better opponents than KU. KU's going to steamroll Wagner, and we're going to start to, you know, KU fans are going to start chirping a little bit. It's all about who you play early, man. K-State, when we look back at this schedule, and I hadn't paid a lot of attention to it, it's a tough schedule. I don't know how good Army is this year, but it's not like your typical cakewalk type schedule at all. They're about to go play at Arizona. Like, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. But honestly, I'm kind of glad for it. Will make K-State better. And I kind of think KU playing these games are going to make them better too. Like, get a couple feel good games out there early. I think that creates the momentum they need. So I think it's going to end up being good for both teams.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make picking the games any easier sure, which we'll do that.
Six and a half.
We'll do that tomorrow with the big slate of college games for sure. But I mean, yeah, this is the part of the season that both teams are getting into where, you know, they're lower opponents and you've got to handle business. You've got to get yourself right because it's going to be a brutal gauntlet once you get into conference play.
I'm ready for some chirping. As somebody with no skin in that game that appreciates and really loves both schools, I'm ready for some chirping. Let's hear some noise here, KU and K-State fans. Get a little back and forth going. All right, that does it. Jam-packed Thursday. That was a lot of fun today. It feels good. Feels like football season. The Royals get a win. We got breaking news in there. We've made our predictions. Tomorrow we will come back and we will predict the football weekend. We've got to make some picks. We're going to have outrageous spreads on the KU and K-State games, and then we'll probably pick some of the headliners as there are three top 10 matchups on the Saturday slate. Looking forward to all of it. For Tommy Caster, thanks to PJ Glasser for joining us to talk betting. Thanks to Tim Fitzgerald for joining us to talk K-State. For Max Power, we'll see you tomorrow.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.